When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the latest Liverpool Echo Blood Red podcast. My name's Tom Cavilla and I'm today joined by Theo Squires and Ryan Patton. We're going to be talking through Saturday's win at Crystal Palace, and we'll start with you, Theo. You were at the game at Selhurst Park. What did you make of it?
It's pretty rubbish, wasn't it? Let's be honest. I didn't really do much for most of it. Like, Liverpool knew they had the opportunity to go top of the table. You think, at least give us a shot on target or something to go off. But it wasn't until the subs coming on in the 74th minute that it suddenly got a bit of life from Liverpool's point of view. Obviously then seconds later, Ayew gets sent off. Seconds later again, Salah equalises, and then you have these great scenes at the end. Liverpool are top of the league. Gets even better on the end of Saturday when Villa beat Arsenal, and Liverpool preserving it here. They're going for the title, you proper contenders. And it goes either way now, doesn't it? It's like Liverpool are getting very fortunate in terms of winning games when not playing well, coming back late. But is it the stuff of champions? We'll find out in May.
Well, they are now top of the league for the first time this season, I think that's right in saying that.
Yeah.
And they've come from behind again, Ryan, in the game to win. That's now 18 points they've won from losing positions. I know people have said a lot, you know, that's the sign of a champion team. Do you buy into that?
Well, it definitely is, isn't it? Because it always is a case of, it is a sign of showing that resilience to come through in adversity when you're not playing well. That is a sign of champions. But then that also has to be balanced by just sort of having a sort of statement win and having just putting a team to the sword like straight away and not needing to sort of be hit with a setback to sort of spring the team into action. And that seems to be what Liverpool needs at the moment, is they actually need to go one down or need to actually have suffered a setback for them to actually to wake up a little bit and to put in a good performance. Because as Theo said, like the 74 minutes before the Jones Elliott came on, it was dull, wasn't it? It was an old form from Liverpool, but Liverpool have came through it again. But it would just be nice to see not a similar performance like the Villa home game in August, where just another one of them where it's Liverpool just go out and it just come through the best side and it's quite a comfortable win rather than,
you'll see that on Sunday.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah, rather than needing it. It's great having these scenes at the end, like the Fulham game, the 4-3, and then the Palace one. It was two amazing moments, but it'd be nice to see just a comfortable one, I think, and then sort of Liverpool to show that other sign of champions of us being comfortably the superior side.
What is strange about this season is Liverpool haven't played well for the majority of it. They've got gaps on that side, whether it's they need another centre-back or they don't have a world-class holding midfielder. And as Ryan said, there's so many games when you're coming back there, you mentioned those 18 points, but they've still got the most wins. They've still got the least defeats. They've still got the most goals. They've still got the best defence. Like, they are the best in that division by a country mile at the moment. And you think, well, if they are going to get a better second half of the season, as they normally do, you do get a little bit excited about where they can end up, but you do need that convincing performance at some point. We probably are going to see it in the next couple of weeks. Like, they haven't played anyone of note at Anfield that's going to create an atmosphere so far. Like Fulham in those last 5-10 minutes, that's the first time we've had a real atmosphere at Anfield this season. When you've got United, when you've got Arsenal and Newcastle, a League Cup quarter final, and you're top of the league going into these games, you're going to get a bit more life there. When we get into 2024, that's when you'll see, are Liverpool just contenders or are they favourites?
You mentioned the league table. I was looking at it yesterday and thinking, oh, they've only lost one game. And then you think actually what that game was as well. That makes it even worse. Mm. The Spurs game, obviously Liverpool, the Diaz goal. But just going back to the Palace game, Theo, you know, we've seen Klopp talk a lot before about wanting the five subs rule introduced in the past, which obviously came in a couple of years ago. And we're seeing the benefit of that at the minute. You know, Harvey Elliott comes on and gets a goal. But also the switch at halftime, tactical switch in terms of Trent moving directly into midfield, Gomez comes to right back. What did you make of that? I know you're a big fan of moving Trent into midfield. Is that a change Klopp should be making permanently then, just having him in the midfield?
On recent performances, I'd argue yes. Like, he is certainly having more of an impact on the game. And while it wasn't him scoring a winner against Fulham and getting assists or anything in this one, he was a lot more composed and in control compared to Endo. Like, Endo's had two great games in the previous week, and then he's a bit lost physically. Like, I know he was fouled for the VAR one that called back on the penalty, but he was still a second slow to responding to these. He's getting out-muscled a lot, and it will take him time to adjust to English football. But Trent, when you've got him on the ball and he's in that midfield, he's like, this is my ballpark you're playing in now. He's just so confident, and he's enjoying his football. You want to get him on the ball as much as possible, and if he's in midfield, it arguably suits the rest of the team if you go to a 4-2-3-1 with the players they've got at their disposal. Like, Gomez is doing so well at right-back. Yeah. Elliot, we've always had that debate. Is he a right-winger? Is he a midfielder? He's probably a number 10. And I saw it during the international break with England to 21s. They have him as that number 10, but it's a free role, so he covers everything. He has to get back. He has to make it a midfield three and defend, whether it's at the left-back position, the right-back position, wherever. So, well, that's exactly what Liverpool want from a sort of midfielder. So he could do that role. We know Szoboszlai could do that role. You think of a double pivot, that suits McAllister, that suits Trent, that suits Endo. You're not relying on as many goals from a Diaz on the wing. Nunes can just be that main striker. That formation change could be perfect for all of them, but you don't want to see it set in stone. This is what we do now. You like the fact that Liverpool are varying it up, that they can start 4-3-3 with an inverted right back. Oh, it's too congested in the middle. Trent go out wide a bit, but then you can put him in midfield, take it up a notch. Gomez can come on and be so superb at right back as he has been for the majority of the season, and strength and depth in attack and midfield. When you've still got players who are injured there, by the way, they're all coming on and making difference in games. So you just look at the past week. Endo's come on and scored a really important goal against Fulham. Nunes comes on against Sheffield United, gets a massive assist. And then Jones comes on, gets an assist for Salah's goal. Elliot gets the winner and gets Ayew sent off in the process. This competition for places at Liverpool is so good at the moment, and that's why they can vary up the formation. And it's very hard to predict what they're going to do, and it's even harder to stop it.
And Ryan, as well, we saw on Saturday, Mo Salah gets his 200th goal finally for Liverpool. 150 in the Premier League as well. Not bad for a one-season one.
Well, I think it's when Salah is approaching these milestones, he's always very aware of them. Yeah. I think you can see he was chasing that 200th goal. So it was like, it was amazing to see him get it. And yeah, just what an absolute player. Just I was seeing the list of like the all-time Premier League goal scorers and all-time Liverpool goal scorers. I think it's been blessed to be a Liverpool fan and just be able to watch, to have been there for all of Salah's journey. Like, I don't think you look at it, look at the company that he's in that top five, and like that, like this generation of Liverpool fans have sort of been there to see all those goals and just witnessed greatness, and someone just build this legacy that will, I don't know, I think Liverpool fans will be blessed to see another player of his ilk who is able to get anywhere near his numbers at any other point in our lifetime. So the fact that we've been able to see it is just, and he's altered this game, hasn't he? Like, yeah. I think Salah, when he used to be the sort of winger where when he would beat a man, he would get past them. And I think now sometimes, like, I think his pace has gone a little bit. Like, I don't think completely, but there's times now when he has beat the man, and sort of he doesn't just sort of do that direct run to goal anymore. He sort of checks back, but he's just altered his game to become this amazing playmaker and to contribute in with so many assists as well. He's just unbelievable.
I'd like to see him actually get, you know, that run in a defence behind, so we can see if he has still got that pace. Because obviously teams know if they defend deep, he can't run and he can't get behind. But that's when he just puts his foot on the ball, looks up, and we're seeing these playmaking abilities from him. Like the pass for Elliot, it's so simple.
Yeah.
But Match of the Day did some good analysis of it, where you've got those three players there. They've drawn them over and they've created the space for someone else. Like, he's a very intelligent footballer. Yeah. And while he's not necessarily beating players the same way as we saw, you know, the really good City goal where he beats everyone. Yeah. He's not really had a chance to do that because they're putting just two, three players in front of him blocking the path. But he can still take this, create space for someone else, put that pass in and get the assist. And he's just a brilliant all-round player. You don't tend to see the foreign players especially stay at a club for that long and get up to those levels and just hope that this isn't the last season. We'll get a couple more years out of him, because as long as he's doing this, you want him at one of the best teams in European football, competing for Premier Leagues, competing for Champions Leagues.
Favourite Mo Salah goal in a Liverpool shirt?
We seem to be asking this every couple of weeks at the moment. I'm pretty sure we did ask this a couple of weeks ago. I think I said United 2-0, just because that was the day you knew Liverpool were going to win the Premier League. But then you can also throw in, Chelsea screamer was amazing.
Southampton away was good.
I
think the Roma goal, top left.
Yeah,
in
that
the Champions
one's
League.
Forgotten a little bit because they didn't go on.
To yeah,
win, isn't it?
But that was a really good goal.
That one. I think Gorski said the Champions League final one. I'm pretty sure it was Gorski said it. Obviously, you're not going to overlook that. The City goal we've already mentioned when he goes past everyone. But you're always hoping that he's got one more big one.
City away, Champions League.
That
seems to be forgotten as well.
Again, they didn't go.
That was a good goal.
Mine definitely is the United 2-0 because they're just that sort of did see when it was everyone sort of felt confident to then say, oh, Liverpool are going to win the league title this season. That was like the ultimate release of that one.
Yeah, one person who didn't enjoy his goal, Theo, was Roy Hodgson. He was not a happy man after the full-time whistle. What did you make of his comments after the game? Because you were there and, you know, he was very critical of pretty much everything after the game. VAR, football, life, retirement, saying he's had enough. I mean, I didn't think the red card was too outrageous, really. I mean, he stopped a clear attack and then before that he gets booked for just, you know, blocking the play. Yeah. So I didn't think it was too harsh, really. I mean, what were your thoughts on his comments after the game?
Hodgson's, he's a manager under pressure. Like, is it 1-9 now for Crystal Palace? And it means a little bit more to him because it's his club. It's where he grew up. He's had his second chance to go back. He's like semi-retired a couple of times and come out of it. For it to mean so much to him, you can see why he's getting frustrated. And was it the best transfer window for them as well? You expect a bit more from Palace. I agree with you in terms of the red card. There wasn't really much you can dispute there. Like, the second one is a foul. You were already on a booking. It's a silly thing to do when you're clipping at his heels. You could say the first one is harsh because Van Dijk has taken advantage of the situation and just kicked it at him. But he's still in the position. He's not backed away. You've given that opportunity there for it to happen. But Hodgson, he's always had a moment. He's had a moment when he was a Liverpool manager. Yeah. He always bites people's heads off when he's under pressure. He did it when he was England boss as well. Interesting to see how long he lasts in that job at the moment. You imagine the next retirement will be the final one for him.
Yeah. And Ryan, I mean, during the game, it was a really strange game in terms of not only how it played out, but also the number of cards that were given out during the game. I mean, there was a number of them. I was thinking, how was that? A yellow card?
Yeah. But I think there's been a few games like that this season, hasn't there? Where like the Liverpool Tottenham game we talked before, like, That game was not a sort of ill-tempered game whatsoever, and there were loads of red cards in it, and nearly every play was booked. And like, I think there is a thing of how referees approach the game this season is a bit different. They're a bit more aggressive with when the cards are players, and I think that is a bit problematic because I think we've seen a few now where it's like two yellow cards, and you're like, is that really enough to justify a player leaving the field and going down to 10 men? Like, I think by the rules of the game goals, I think Ayew's red. It was a silly foul, and I think when you look at there's an angle for the second yellow, and you see Liverpool are really on for a counter attack. Yeah. So you think, well, he has prevented a counter attack there, but it's just there's so many times now where it's like loads of soft challenges and resulting in yellow cards. I think the same in the derby. Ashley Young got it was a silly foul in 15 minutes, but he gets a yellow card and then walking on tightrope then, and the referee sort of has then set the tone for how he's going to ref the game. I think it definitely is a bit of I think it could benefit football to revise just what is a yellow card and how the sort of the rules of the game are implemented, because I think we're seeing far too many bookings and far too many red cards, and it does affect the flow of the game, mm-hmm. doesn't it? I think ideally I'd like to see less, especially when it's not. When it's not like it doesn't justify them going a man down.
Yeah.
There's no consistency to it at the moment. Like, referencing that derby game, Tsimikas on the same basis should have been at least booked. You've got a few times where players are getting away with it, but referees, they seem to change their mind week after week on what does constitute a foul, what doesn't. It feels like there is so much pressure and scrutiny on them at the moment that they have to, well, in their minds, they have to dish out these cards to try and take control of the game. Mm. Like, there's going to be more scrutiny on them if they don't hand out a yellow card. Yeah. It's been given out a harsh yellow card. But, it's just all very stop-start. And you miss the benefit of the doubt. You miss the human nature. And with technology, more and more technology, you are going to lose that human element. But, you know, for the offsides, where a player's just offside and it's that tightest margin, benefit of the doubt to the striker to give them the goal.
Mm.
Seen it at the weekend with those handball goals, like the Arsenal one, the Bournemouth one. Benefit of the doubt, why not just...
Yeah.
It's not deliberate. It's not made a massive impact. They're still going to probably get the shot on target and score. And then with these cards, he's done one. Give him a warning. You don't need to send him off straight there, even though it has benefited Liverpool in this case. But it seems to be very robotic and inconsistent at the same time from officials at the moment. It does need a relook, but there's so much pressure on at the moment. It's getting more and more week after week. Then maybe that's why we are seeing a few more questionable decisions.
The discourse doesn't help around when it's like it's not a bad decision by any means to send Mayu off, but the fact that the reaction from the pundits from Hodgson was so aggressive, that I just don't think that sort of such an aggressive reaction to it is not helping sort of improve the situation around refereeing.
But then maybe it's a manager under pressure, rather than people asking how have Palace lost that game when they were in control for 75 minutes. It's the referees cost them. It's changing the narrative, buys in a bit of time. Like, the fans were definitely on Hodgson's side, like the Crystal Palace fans. They were saying it's called corrupt, referees are scouser and all this sort of stuff. But it's just what we're getting used to week after week. It's boring, isn't it, talking about the officials, but they're the headlines every game at the moment.
Well, let's move away from the officials then, and let's talk about Darwin Nunez, Theo.
That's another boring conversation.
No, we're going to talk about him. No goals in 7 games now. He's still having an impact in matches when he comes on. We saw that Sheffield United when he, the role in the second goal. But we also seen as well his lack of end product in a couple of games recently where he's been played through on goal by Trent, played a great pass through, and you're thinking, right, this is it. He's going to score. Hits the bar against Fulham, Sheffield United, season one save. He didn't really do a lot against Crystal Palace. I mean, is his form a concern, or is it being blown out of proportion a little bit, or does he need a goal? He needs a goal soon.
He needs a goal, yeah. The Crystal Palace game is the one that's more of a concern for me than any of the others. Like the saying is, you have to be in the right position to miss, and you can never fault Nunes for that. He creates chances. And he misses a load, but he scores a load as well. Like the one you just mentioned there at Sheffield United, similar to the two he scored against Newcastle, where he's won Liverpool the game. He should score against Fulham. They've won anyway. He's still making things happen, being this chaotic nuisance. But against Crystal Palace, he did nothing. Like, there was nothing there from him at all. I don't think he had a shot. If he did, it would have been off target, or it would have been offside. And it's just, how many times can you be offside in one game? Read the line. When Liverpool were getting these attacks into the area, his touch let him down, or the decision was wrong with the pass. There wasn't enough on it. That's the raw nature that he needs to work on, that inconsistency. Like, you know what you're going to get with Darwin Nunez, and you accept it when it's exciting and it's winning in your games, when it's making things happen, even if he's not the one putting it in the back of the net. But when it's a struggling day for Liverpool, when they're not creating chances, that's when he's supposed to be the one that makes the difference. And when he's not... And it's another quiet day for Diaz. Salah was going through a quiet spell, even though he gets his goal. And that's where you need that something a bit more. And it's obviously tougher when Jota are injured, because he's someone you can always rely on for a goal. We spoke to Alisson after the final whistle, and he came out and said, sorry, Salah's always the man. You can make the difference up front. Even when he's not playing well, he will get you a goal. You can't say that from Darwin Nunez. And it's end of October, his last Premier League goal. He's not scored since the Bournemouth screamer. Out of absolutely nothing. That one summed him up, didn't it? That awful touch, followed up by this amazing goal. But he needs a goal, and what better time to come up? Like, you wouldn't bet against him to get a winner against Arsenal, or get a winner against United, to step up when it matters. But now it is 7 games. It is beginning to weigh on minds a little bit.
How do you rate his start to life at Liverpool, Ryan? Because obviously last season he had a lot of criticism. This season he's shown it in glimpses, but I'm not sure of that comparison with Haaland when he first came in, it slightly hindered him a little bit, because I think people are constantly comparing him to him.
That's a bit of an unfair comparison. Well, I think the comparison was natural, because it was Liverpool and Man United. Liverpool and Man City, both went for a more natural number 9, and it was interesting to see how that affected teams that hadn't previously played with that sort of striker. But then Haaland, just an absolute monster, and was going into a team that weren't as in much of a rebuild as Liverpool. So it's slightly unfair to have lumped them two together, but it's just natural that would have happened. I think Nunes has been, like exactly what Theo said, really. Like, he's been really good this season, and obviously they're really effective. And I think even though he's been going through this dry spell, I think he's added a lot to his game, sort of his all-round games in terms of link-up play. Like last season, his link-up play was a little bit non-existent. Like he'd never keep possession really, or that he would thread someone through on goal. Whereas this season, I think his holder play's been really good. I think the way he's brought the other attackers into play has been really promising. And I think over the last few games, even though he's not been scoring, he's still been playing quite well. I thought he was really good against City in terms of stretching the play and sort of being a bit of a nuisance from a more tactical perspective. But like the Crystal Palace game, that was because he had an absolute nightmare, didn't he? He was really poor, and it was sort of Nunes at his frustrating worst.
It's like Nunes from last year.
Yeah, in terms of that, the amount of time he lost possession was ridiculous, and he was always wandering offside. Like he was a bit of a brainless performance when the chaos that Nunes brings to the team, it becomes a problem rather than sort of adds to that, makes Liverpool unpredictable. But I still think that he's not by no means would have dropped him. I think I'd start him against Man United on Sunday, because I think he's due a goal. He's still getting in positions where he's creating chances. And I think he's been a little bit unfortunate. Like it was like the Fulham on it in the bite. I've never seen a player hit the woodwork as many times as Nunes. Yeah. Like, I don't quite know how he manages to conspire to do it so often. But I think that will eventually lead to goals. I think he will go on it soon. He'll go on a run where he bangs a few in quick succession. Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of buoyed by how he's developed this season. I think he now looks a lot more like a Jurgen Klopp striker and someone that can fit in this Liverpool team going forwards.
Yeah, and just going to the title race now, we've had that Arsenal result on Saturday evening after the Liverpool game. Arsenal lose at Aston Villa. Good for Liverpool, obviously, in terms of the table. Liverpool go top. City game, going behind at Luton. I'm watching the game and I couldn't believe it. Man City were absolutely terrible for that first half. Honestly, so bad. And then Luton score out of nowhere at the end of the first half. And then City, naturally get two goals and turn it around. But what, in terms of how it is at the moment, who are you more worried about out of the two teams in terms of the title race? We'll come on to Aston Villa in a minute, but just in terms of the two, which one sort of worries you more?
Manchester City. It's always Manchester City. Like Arsenal, they've got good players, they've got a good squad, but they're going for the Champions League this year. That is something that's new to them. They are going to pick up injuries. They are going to struggle to balance up, compete on both fronts, and I expect them to fall short because of that. Like we've seen at the weekend where they can't get it over the line, and I know they did in midweek against Luton, but there's just something lacking in that squad, even though they acted in depth and Rice and they have taken it up a next level. Whereas City, they've just got that experience of they've done absolutely everything, they've won pretty much everything. If they get the Club World Cup, it is everything. They've got so many world-class players, and yeah, they've got injuries, but they always come so much stronger second half of the season. They always come and win like 18 out of 19 games there. They will be there or thereabouts no matter what. The one year they haven't, they were absolutely miles off the pace. They're not miles off the pace yet. There's still something there. And when you've got Rodri in that team, they seem to always find a way to win. With Liverpool, it's just waiting for them to get that next step. Like what's really nice about this Liverpool squad is they've got Salah, Van Dijk, Alisson, these players that have got the experience, that have done it all themselves. But then they've got these younger players that are just starting their journey. They're absolutely fearless. It's like, well, they are going to be contenders. They are going to be proper challengers for years to come. And this is just year one. It's like, if this is year one, you've got to take advantage of a City falling away if you can. And that's what they're doing at the moment. But it's still a long way to go, as it's always boring. And the answer from the footballers, just focus on ourselves. You can't worry about what anyone else do. Exactly. Harvey Elliott, he spoke to us after the game and he did admit that he had a little glance at these other results, and he was a bit deflated after Arsenal got that late winner in midweek. Obviously, this was before they went and lost to Aston Villa, but there are going to be so many more twists and turns to come. You just got to focus on what Liverpool are doing.
And Ryan, what about Aston Villa? I mean, I think a lot of people said they were going to do well this season, but I don't think anyone expected them to be doing this well.
No, absolutely not. I think sort of the Liverpool performance against Aston Villa in August is a little bit underrated when you look at the context now, what Aston Villa are doing. Liverpool, that was one of Liverpool's most comfortable victories so far this season. And I think Emery is a really talented manager, and they've got a really good squad of players. But you would never have thought that they'd be third in the league, and with the City, Arsenal, and Tottenham over recent weeks. You know, I think they're proving they are. Actually, it's a really good side. I do, because I just think naturally there will be a drop off. I don't expect them to continue this level of form. But I think they eventually will drop out of the top four eventually, because I think the it's the Europa Conference that they're in. They should be favourites to win that competition, and I think that'll be where their priorities go to. As the season continues to progress, they'll be thinking of getting silverware rather than concentrating on a league form. I think they're a high energy team, and it's not the biggest squad, so I think they will eventually tire. But yeah, but what they do at the moment is amazing.
It's just making me glad that Liverpool's trip to Villa is like the final away game for them this season. Like, you know, Villa are going to have dropped off by then. Maybe they'll be looking at a European final and, you know, have a big atmosphere. But it's a nicer time to go there than at the moment when they're at the peak of their powers.
Yeah.
But they will drop off. They don't have the depth in that squad. It's the first time in however many years they've had to combat on more than one front. But as I mentioned before, Liverpool got that experience that so many others do not. And you'd like to think that will make the difference for them.
A lot of people have been saying about Villa as well. It raised the question about what Steven Gerrard was doing with that team in terms of how Emery's kind of got them.
Do you have a theory on this? Which Aston Villa player is not in that team at the moment because of injury that when Gerrard had to play him? Tyrone Mings.
Mings.
Mings was the one whose performances absolutely fell apart. And
brings chaos to the back four.
Whereas the players in this back four, I'm pretty sure Gerrard signed most of them, didn't they?
Yeah.
So like, maybe he didn't get the fair chance to the. If he had his signings in place, maybe you'd have done better than he did. But he wouldn't be doing this. Like we're seeing in Saudi, he's not exactly having the best time out there. He wanted to be his own Jurgen Klopp. He's turning out to be more of a Brendan Rodgers.
Brutal. Let's hope Brendan Rodgers not listening. Just lastly then, we'll turn our attention to Thursday. We've got Europa League game coming up against Royal Union, Saint-Gilloise, Belgian team.
Did you get my pronunciation right there?
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty good. Better than mine.
Top of the league.
I'm on Gilly, so better than my attempt.
I just won Union, SG.
Yeah, Royal Union. They're top of the league in Belgium at the minute.
I'll take your word for it.
Yes. What do you think Liverpool are going to do in terms of approaching this? Because they've got that huge game against Manchester United, which we'll talk about on a podcast later this week.
Mm-hmm.
Not for today, we'll say that for then, but in terms of Thursday, how would you approach it? Do you think Klopp's just going to put a load of the kids out, academy players? Do you think that would be the best way to do it?
It's got a bit of a mixture, I think. Like Liverpool, so far this season, have been able to rotate for the Europa League, and you don't expect them to change too much from that in this game. Like, it's still getting minutes for some of the fringe players. Like, Harvey Elliott hasn't started too much. He's had a great performance against Palace. You wouldn't be against him starting. You wouldn't be against one of the senior forwards starting to get a goal there. But when it is an absolute dead rubber for Liverpool, it's not for Union, but it is for Liverpool, you want to see some of the youngsters play, give them that opportunity. Like Conor Bradley, he would have played a lot more this season if not for injury. I know he had the year at Bolton last year where he did brilliantly, and you can say it's a big step up. It was a big step up for Kwanzaa, and we're seeing how well he's doing. Like Kwanzaa, you'd expect to start. Like maybe we'll see a bit more of a Chambers or a Doak, Scanlon. Kate Gordon could make his first appearance in, 18 months for the first team? Probably coming up to 2 years, actually, isn't it?
A few debuts coming up.
Maybe not full debut. I think most of them involved have played for the team in some form. It'll be like first starts or first European games. Like, if you look at the European squad, pretty much all the players on Liverpool's Europa League squad in terms of List B have been involved this season. There's only two that haven't. So I don't think it's going to be too much of a step away from that. You can maybe look back to the AC Milan game a couple of years ago where we did see a few more kids there. Like there was Max Waltman came.
Morton.
Tyler Morton started. Brabby, I think, played in that one as well. But it was still Minamino, Origi for me. Salah started that. If Salah wants to start this, Salah could captain this one. So yeah, I think it's going to be a mixture of the two. But when I predict my team in a little bit, I'll be leaning more on the kids' side because that's what I'd do if I was here in the club.
And Ryan, would you go along with that? Or do you want to see all the big guns out there?
I'll be devastated if Mo Salah's starting on Thursday. He should be nowhere near that starting lineup. But I think Liverpool's squad depth is, as Theo said, we've got the players. where you can sort of change up a lot, and it still look relatively strong. Like Harvey Elliott, he played only came up for 20 minutes and had a great performance. He'll be ready to go again. And the Curtis Jones only played for 20 minutes. Gakpo hasn't sort of been playing the full 90 a lot. So I think having those today in the 11s automatically adds like a little bit of experience and makes it not just a complete side of youngsters, because I don't think Liverpool shouldn't be going into this game at all. The result doesn't matter at all, really, does it? But I think it can be useful in terms of keeping players sharp and giving other players in the squad minutes to sort of make sure that everyone's still up to speed with because I don't think it's going to be the most like hot tempered game where someone's at risk of an injury from a terrible tackle. You wouldn't hope so anyway. Probably just jinxed that. but I think there is a blend, but the result doesn't matter at all. So I think the focus should be all on Man United, really.
Just get home injury free.
Yeah.
Yeah. I won't ask you to do a team prediction because I think that could be quite a task.
Let's do it. Let's have some fun.
Do you really want to do
that? Yeah, I can do that. Let's have some fun.
Okay.
Keller's in goal. I'm sure we're all
definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
Conor Bradley's right back. Kranz's centre back. I'm going to go Joe Gomez alongside him because he can captain the side. Luke Chambers left back. Am I just doing the whole 11?
Your knowledge of the captain is better than mine.
Yeah, so Luke Chambers is left back. McConnell can be the six, give him a first start. Elliot and Jones can start either side of him.
Yeah.
Gakpo can start up front because he's not started many, as Ryan has said, and go for a goal. I want to give Kay Gordon a start.
Okay.
He gets his comeback. He can go on the right. And then let's go Ben Doak on the left. I know he's not played there. I don't think he's even done it much for the academy levels, but he is right-footed, which I don't think many people realise. So let's see him actually cutting inside. Let's go that young. Yeah. It won't be that team. I reckon there'll be a couple more senior players involved. Maybe we'll see like a Scanlon on the left or something like that. But yeah, let's go for something like that.
Okay, and then just lastly, score prediction. Could be anything.
goals.
3-0.
Union, they've got a lot to play for still. They can still get through to the playoff round in the Europa League. They can still go to the Conference League. They can still get knocked out of Europe altogether. They should be up for this. It's at Anderlecht's ground, isn't it? So I'm not sure how that'll weigh in for them. You wouldn't back against them winning it. Like if Liverpool go properly young, you'd expect them to win, like we saw with Toulouse.
Yeah.
So I'll say like 3-2 to Union, but I don't care. I'm not going to tell you. I'm doing it in the office. As long as I'm home for midnight, I'm happy.
And just no injuries. That's all I want. No injuries. Right. And I'm going to go 2-2.
Okay. I'm going to say 3-0, but it could be completely wrong anyway. Right, we'll leave it there for today's Blood Red podcast. We'll be back later this week to look ahead to the Manchester United game. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.